Welcome to another edition of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. Brought to you by our partners Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, FireTech, makers of on-scene soot and ash decon products, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the new cool towel, and the 2017 Great Florida Fire School. We'll be back with today's show right after these important messages. How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There'll be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th at the Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough. But one more big surprise. The registration fee is just $125. That's right, $1.25 for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Want to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. That's thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School, be there. Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. Today we bring you a special edition of Five Alarm Task Force. Our guest is Chief Bobby Halton. If you're in the fire service, you probably know who Chief Halton is. Besides being the editor-in-chief of Fire Engineering and the coordinating editor for Fire Nation, My Firefighter Nation, and more, he is also the educational director for FDIC. If there's something to be done in the fire service, there's a good chance that Chief Halton has done it. Now, normally we insert a small editorial in this section, not today. And normally our podcast lasts approximately an hour and a quarter. Again, not today. The interview with Chief Halton went so well, and there was so much to learn from what he had to say, that I believed that it would be improper for me to arbitrarily start editing his wisdom out of the show. So I hope you'll bear with us through the entire podcast. Listen to it in segments if you'd like. But it's my pleasure to bring you Five Alarm Task Force with our special guest, Chief Bobby Halton. Stay safe. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed: excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And welcome to another very special episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And we are honored and privileged to have as our guest today, Chief Bobby Halton. I tried to look up a biography, and I was referred to encyclopedia full of pages of everything on Bobby Halton. But you probably know him as one of the great mentors in the fire service today, the educational director of FDIC, former fire chief. Anything to do with the fire service, Chief Halton has been with it, in it, and done it, basically. And so it's a pleasure to welcome you, Chief.
Oh, thank you for having me, and I'm just another American firefighter out there trying to show up and do my job. So well,
that's where we special. Love. That's where, yeah. Well, I think you're a little bit on the special side, but I think most of my listeners will agree with that. But it really is a pleasure to have you with us. And I know it's a very busy schedule that you have, and I certainly appreciate you taking the time. And in our correspondence prior to the show, we talked about kind of three subjects that we really wanted to try to address today, and that was firefighter health, wellness, and functional fitness. Also, the cancer problem that we're facing, and of course, the problem with mental instability and the very sad and increasing rate, possibly, of firefighter suicide that most of us on this side of the desk really had not heard a great deal about. But as of late, it's been coming out, and it's really has seemed to become a major problem in the fire service. So why don't we start with that, Chief? Because I know we were talking a little bit before we started the recording, and the numbers I think will surprise people who weren't aware of how high a problem this is for us in the fire service.
Yeah, it's great you bring that up, Steve, and thank you for allowing me to spend some time with you. When we look at the issue of behavioral health in the fire service, and when we look at specifically the tragedy of suicide, the only recording source that we have currently that I'm aware of goes through Jeff Dill, who runs the Behavioral Health Alliance. The problem for Jeff is that there's no compulsion for a group to share the fact that a member has committed suicide. As a matter of fact, based on many, many issues having to do with what is commonly known as stigma, better understood as shame, for most folks. People hear the word stigma, they don't know what that really denotes. It's a wonky word, but it's really about shaming, right? It's about being embarrassed. It's about something that you don't want folks to know about you or to know about something going on with you. So there's tremendous shame around suicide and mental health in general, and it's not unique to the fire service. It's a Western cultural, probably, I don't know much about Eastern culture, but probably an Eastern cultural issue as well. But in Western culture, dating back to the early 1900s, late 1800s, with the rise of a woman who was a radical anarchist named Emma Goldman, who then gave rise to a group that embraced what was called the eugenics movement. And they were a quasi-political social movement that revolved around the idea of collectivism and socialism. And they called themselves at those days the progressives. And what they embraced in that movement was eugenics, because if you talk about collectivism and socialism, obviously, collectivism and socialism, in order to make that work, everybody needs to be a contributing member. So the outgrowth of some of that, and based on the work of Darwin, remember Darwin came out early 1900s. And so based on Darwin's work, that everyone thought at that time, and with the best of intentions too, albeit with the best of intentions, that we could somehow evolve into a more perfect species, right? By we could become, you know, a master race, if you will. And this is long before the Nazis or anything happened, right? So you have all this going on, and very good people too. Everybody from Teddy Roosevelt to George Bernard Shaw to, you name it, the famous people got involved in the eugenics movement. Now, the eugenics movement grew into wildly disgusting proportions, to where they were actually sterilizing tens of thousands, probably in excess of 100,000 Americans were sterilized because they were determined to be imperfect. Hmm. And it grew to be, it started off, IQ tests came out of that movement. So it started off with you were just mentally not well enough. In other words, your IQ was too low. You were feeble, what they call feeble-minded, based on IQ tests. It's also where we got the word moron from. Mm-hmm. But then it grew to if you were an alcoholic or if you had a mental health issue. And at times, folks got a fellow named Dubois, who was associated with Margaret Sanger politically. He was espousing, and many others, that we should start to euthanize people. George Bernard Shaw was part of that chorus of voices, that when you're no longer a functioning or contributing member, you should be euthanized, right? So we would assume that, you know, all of it, and Americans were, what's fascinating is American culture didn't even realize how endemic and how broad and how horrible this whole movement was when the Nazis picked up on it and took it to its next conclusion, where it was used as a tool of the National Socialist Party, which was the Nazi Party, to kill Jews, Catholics, Gypsies, anyone who they felt to be imperfect or non-conformable to their picture of the perfect race. Then America revealed and then was disgusted by it. Unfortunately, the last sterilization based on that theory happened in 1974.
Wow.
And if you think it went away, last week a woman named Anne Finelli, and I might be pronouncing that wrong, in Oregon, had her children taken away from her because her IQ is 72. So it's a fascinating undercurrent that people know about, and we're part of society, so firefighters know about it. So when we say that, you know, there's shame because you're supposed to be invulnerable, or you're supposed to be Superman, or firefighters are supposed to be zero defect or perfect, all of that may be somewhat true. But to the greater extent, curing the whole stigma of suicide is going to require a societal change in perception towards mental health, towards what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. Because if you can have your children taken away from you in 2017, because and there was no abuse, the children being, there was nothing wrong in the home, the state of Oregon just felt that her IQ was just too darn low, and that they could get more advantages and have more opportunity if they lived with wealthier, better off people. If you take that to its logical conclusion, we should take away all of my kids and give them to Bill Gates because he could do a much better job of providing for them than I can.
Right.
So it's about so when we talk about this shaming in the fire service, we have to remember not to be, which is so fashionable these days, hyper self-critical, right? That, you know, that it's self-hating, self-loathing has become almost, you know, amazingly popular in American culture, Western culture lately. So we have to first avoid that, which the fire service is fantastic at doing too. We're not, you know, we don't give a rat's hoot what some pop star thinks about politics or some, you know, some knucklehead who writes children's books. We tend to be a little higher functioning in terms of our evaluation of critical events because of the fact that we deal with critical events all the time as our calling, as our mission, right? So, long story monotonous, a big lead-in. We have a huge crisis in the American Fire Service revolving around mental health and mental conditions. And some of that culminates occasionally in a suicide. But we have to remember, on the same hand, suicide does not necessarily mean that the individual was dealing with a mental health issue. In other words, they may have been dealing with something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a PTSD deal, which has to do with our assumptive world being disrupted. In other words, our assumptive world means that, you know, cars will drive on the right side of the road, the sun will come up in the east, the, you know, people don't, you know, mow down children with guns and drive cars into crowds. So when those things happen, that's trauma. And sometimes those traumas affect us and can start a PTSD cycle. If you don't have a just culture within your organization, a culture that's supportive, a culture that's prepared you for those types of traumas and let you know that if you start having difficulty, you can open up and be embraced and be supported.
Certainly.
You can have problems. And if you do have a just culture, that promotes what's called post-traumatic growth. And post-traumatic growth was first coined by two guys named Tedeschi and Calhoun in 95, but it's as old as the Epic of Gilgamesh, it's as old as the Iliad and the Odyssey, it's as old as the story of Job, you know, Lincoln. You go through trials and tribulations and you come out stronger, you come out more effective, you come out more efficient. that's really true for about 80% of us, especially in the calling of the fire service, where unfortunately the other 20% who are not in just cultures whose assumptive worlds get disrupted, they start having really significant issues with PTSD, which is treatable, absolutely treatable.
Right.
Then there's other, then there's real true mental health issues like bipolar, like schizophrenia, like a whole plethora of mental health conditions that can happen to anyone at any time, at any stage of their lives. Some of them are more common at different stages of our lives. Some of them are less. But not, all that notwithstanding, just like catching the flu or getting prostate cancer, which any man who lives long enough will deal with, mental health issues are basically a disease process. It's not a character flaw. But the problem is, based on our enculturation with the whole eugenics movement and the societal pressures that came from that, the fire service has embraced that. We're people. We picked up on that. Hey, if you're having problems with depression or mental health, man, you're not apt to share that. So to Jeff's numbers, and the long way around in the discussion, but to Jeff's numbers, we just know what people have told Jeff. We don't know what we don't know, right? That there's the knowns, there's the unknowns, and the known and the unknown knowns, or the known unknown and the unknown. So, you know, to kind of go wonky on the old Rumsfeld line there.
Right.
But so we know it's a huge issue, but it could be, we're just looking at the tip of the iceberg. It could be a lot larger. And how we deal with it is about building a just culture. And in Fire Rescue, we published a great article by my friend, Sean Perneski, who is a firefighter, a pilot, and a PhD, who studies under Dr. Woods. That was in Fire Rescue. It's free. It's online. Just Google Just Culture on the Fire Rescue website, and you'll go right to that article. There's also a book by a guy named Sidney Decker, who's another student of Dr. Woods, on just culture. And he talks about it, and it's a great book. He looks at it more through the medical community in the book. But Sean writes about the fire service. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about in that regard, but our whole society does, right? I mean,
absolutely.
I apologize. That would be my lovely dog.
No problem.
Sorry, Steve.
Done that as well, so no worries.
Yeah, I've got my neighbor.
You know, that the points that you raise are very true to me. I think
get some food.
Hang on, Steve. Go ahead.
Sure. The points that you raised, I think, are very apropos in many levels. Number one is, if our listeners have not read the current issue of Fire Engineering and Chief Bruno's article about his flight, getting ready for his flight back from FDIC, and he had that conversation with the woman sitting next to him, who, once she found out he was a firefighter, she said, you know, I believe the firefighters are still the people who live ethically and in our society. These are the people who are still have manners. They're polite. And I think that's very true. And I think one of the causes for that, what has helped thicken our skin a little bit, is that more than any other first responder and maybe any other position in society, we go from hero to zero in microseconds. We can have an amazing rescue take place, or sacrifice to help somebody else take, and it takes place, and it's all over the news and all over the newspapers and social media. 2 days later, because a union asked for a 3% raise in their salary, and the city complains, well, look, you want all these benefits and stuff. Where are we supposed to find the money? Then we're in our zero range again. But we've never stopped doing our job. Other jobs, other people, they strike or they have a slowdown when they don't get their way. Firefighters, even in the heat of negotiations for a contract that's been 2 years expired, respond to every single call that in every alarm that comes in. Finally, about what you mentioned about the stigma, both my wife and I worked at a summer camp years ago in Western Massachusetts. It's part of a national camp movement. And we had a special program there in English, was called the HOPE program. And this program was for mentally and emotionally challenged young adults and kids. And I had never worked with them prior to this. My wife had had some experience, and she had a degree in psychology from her university. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to work with these kids, because I was in charge of radio and television and electronics at this camp, and I had to do something with them. Well, it only took 2 days before I fell in love with these students. And then they started opening up to me, these campers, and I heard their stories. A wonderful young lady who was 14 years old, who had suffered a cranial deformation at birth, smart as a whip, sweet, loving, kind. Her parents, wealthy sort, were so embarrassed by her, they kept her locked in a room upstairs. Food was brought up to her. They didn't want her to come down because they didn't want to see her. And for 4 years, we worked at this camp, and she was there every year, and she knew that every summer, what she told us is what she wanted, to come back to the camp to see us, to be with us again and get our love, because she had no love where she was. And we had other campers who were mentally challenged. And in talking with some of their parents, because the parents had to agree to a conference before and after the camp session, we heard the same thing that their kids were going through, even though at that time, this is the mid-70s, mainstreaming had just slightly begun in communities. And so most of these kids had that stigma applied to them as well. And I think that if there's a group that can possibly bounce back better than anyone else, is just as you said, the fire service, if we have a just culture to be there. And, you know, PTSD, as you know, Chief, was often somebody suffering from after a bad accident or real bad trauma call, they were told to suck it up. That's what happened to me on my first really major trauma call, which was a auto accident with a person trapped and the car was on fire. And I was on the hose line to get out the fire. We did, and EMS arrived, and he lived for 3 days. But the trauma of that call and smelling the burning flesh and everything we did really affected me. And when we got back to the firehouse, the caretaker for that shift, when he saw me come out of the men's room with wiping my mouth from throwing up and tears in my eyes, he said, "Was it the call?" He would have to be the driver on the engine. And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, suck it up. This is what we have to do." And not everybody can. Not everybody can just wave a magic wand and feel better. And I agree that what you said is often too true if we look sometimes from our good side to our narrow-minded side, as we just went through here in Pompano Beach, Florida. Very embarrassing to this community where I live, Greater Pompano, and to the city of Pompano Beach and to the fire service, as there were 6 recruits in a new class, and 5 of them were white. 1 was African-American. And one morning for class, they put a noose on the desk of the African-American young man. This guy stood up and said to the chief, "Don't make a big deal about it. It doesn't bother me. I'm fine." But the chief said, "No, it doesn't work like this way." 1 was fired, and I forget what happened to the other 4. But it made national news. And that shows that we need to work on this just culture. Some of us have a strong one in our departments or our communities, and some of us have very weak ones. And the only way we'll get by these problems, to help our own, because that's what we do, besides helping everybody else, we need to help our own. We need to develop that mental condition that says we can help. We're here. We can reach out to you, and you can reach out to us. Otherwise, we don't have, I don't know. I don't think we have a leg to stand on if we can't help our own people.
Yeah, it's you raised 1,000 issues there. They were tangents to go off on. But just to be clear, we have struck. Firefighters have struck for various reasons throughout the course of our history, numerous times. And 78 in New York, 80 in Chicago. Last year there were several strikes. So
I stand corrected. I apologize.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. You know, there's labor issues or labor issues. I let local people deal with local stuff. You can. It's always easy to say what another man should do, or another, you know, just to be in another man's shoes, and what some folks' perceptions of unionism and all that. So I don't think that's a road anybody wants to go down, and that's a big conversation. I think the union has done such incredible things for the fire service. I think they've contributed in ways that it would take you a month to just list them if you listed them one at a time.
Agreed.
And by the same token, I think there's problems with some of what they do. And I think that, Samuel Gompers at one point, who founded the AFL-CIO, was opposed to public sector unions. So it's a fascinating, like everything in life has a yin and a yang, right? A positive,
sure,
and a negative side. And depending upon where you are, politically, depending on where you are, emotionally, culturally, economically, it's going to affect how you feel about organizations like unions, associations, things like that. But in general, they have done such good work for us. And are there things that if I was the king of the universe, I would change? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Striking being one of them. But that's a huge tool that
sure,
the unions will tell you that they need to hold, you know, in order to get things done. So, that's a broad, terrible subject. You brought up the issue of racism at the end, and when talking about just culture, I think that's a whole nother discussion. When we talk about race in the fire service, there's fascinating things going on today, and we can talk about, there was the Providence 20 decision, about discrimination against the white firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
I think discrimination at any level for any reason is absolutely wrong. I don't think a man or a woman needs to belong to a certain group, organization, or anything in order to be a firefighter. I don't think that anyone should be excluded for being a member or associated with any group, organization, or movement, or sexual orientation. I don't care. Quite frankly, I don't care. All I care about is if they're devoted to the mission, what they believe politically or religiously or their sexual preference. That's none of my business. I'm a Jeffrey. I actually call myself a Crockettonian because I like Davy Crockett's theories, and I love Washington's theories. And I probably should throw Jefferson in there somewhere. I just have to figure out how to get his name in there. A Crockettonian, maybe. A Crockettonian. But Jefferson once said, "I care not whether my neighbor has 20 gods or one god, for it neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg." Right?
Yes.
So, and I totally agree with that. I mean, that's absolutely how it's a very stoic view of life, which I think is important. I think the Stoics had it down with the three disciplines. So I'm totally in that same camp. I think part of the problem that we see today is that we raise one group up, and in order to do that, we push one group down. But we don't need to do that. We just need to lift up everyone. And that's
correct,
what the fire service,
right,
does. We lift up everyone. Every life is sacred. Every opinion has value. I don't care how you choose. One of the things that was fascinating, and this is probably a wild tangent, Steve, and I apologize if we're going crazy here on your conversation, but we were having a conversation the other day about what's called hoarding.
Mm-hmm.
And people describe it as a disorder. And some of our folks in the conversation were talking about how they had passed legislation and rules in order to, and laws that would prohibit people from doing that, which I think is fascinating, because the folks that do that, for whatever reason, do it, right?
Exactly.
So now we're saying that that lifestyle is somehow wrong, immoral, bad, and I understand when it threatens someone else's, you know, safety. In other words, if you put so much weight in an apartment that it collapses it, or it becomes infested with critters. I mean, I get all that. There needs to be some kind of boundaries that we live within when we're under those conditions. But if you're Tommy the Rag Man and you're living on a 20-acre plot of land out there somewhere, and you want to collect old tractors, or you're dealing with what they call hoarding, good for you, Tommy. I mean, who am I? You know, heck, you know, if you walked into my house, you would think I was a fire memorabilia hoarder. You know,
yes, same here.
Yeah, you go to any firefighter's I love me room, and you'd be, you know, holy mackerel, where did all this stuff come from? Because we got statues, and we got little cars, and we got paintings, and we got, you know, plaques and coins and helmets and flags. And I'm just talking about the stuff that I'm looking in my den here as I look around the room. So, but it's fascinating, right? How moral superiority tends to be a real thing in life, right? And what's interesting about moral superiority is generally as we hit our stride, our late teens to mid 40s, we're full of it, man. We're maybe our early 50s. We're just supercharged with being, you know, morally superior. We know the answers. We're ready to go. You know, and then as we start getting a little more fragile, like when we're young, we're pretty fragile, right? We're real vulnerable, and we're much less sure of ourselves. As we get a little older, we get a little more fragile, and we start understanding how important understanding uncertainty and randomness and fragility and all of that becomes a lot more clear, right? And I apologize for my life between 18 and if you knew me between 18 and 50, you know, I didn't like me. I look back on those days, you know, being an idiot here, but you know what I mean? I was so cocksure and so confident, and you know, it's which is good because we need that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need some of that. But we also need to listen to some of the folks that have been rode hard and put up wet, right? You were talking about Chief B. You know, Chief B has been through a lot. He's been through a lot professionally, physically, you know, socially. You know, you want to look at a guy who's been beat up and you know, he's your – back in the day when the Romans would win a battle, they would ride the guy through the town square, through the city on a chariot. But a guy would stand on the chariot behind him and whisper in his ear the entire time, fame is fleeting, fame is fleeting. Just to let him know that, yeah, this is your big day. Tomorrow you're one of us.
Right.
So I think that's important. And Chief B is probably the best person when he talks about, you know, a lot of people talk about modesty and humility. He's the guy. I mean, he is the guy.
Yes, agreed, 100%.
You know, yeah, and so I think, you know, when we talk about people doing something as arrogant and mean-spirited and cruel as targeting someone for their race, it's just inexcusable. It's just targeting someone for their weight. It's inexcusable. Targeting someone for their gender is inexcusable, or their sexual preference, or their religion. I mean, that's a new one today, where if you're a Christian or whatever, practice any religion. You know, the fellow Dawkins the other day was upset because for some reason, oh, I know what it was. He was going to speak in California on a radio show, and the guy found out that he had been making fun of Islam, so he wouldn't let him on the show. Well, Stephen Dawkins has made a career out of making fun of people who are Christians. Because he turned his ire of religion on the Muslims, this guy kicked them off. Well, making fun of Muslims or Islam or Christianity or any religion, why do you care? Why would you do that? And firefighters don't do that. A friend of mine who's a young Muslim girl, she's a firefighter, a great friend of mine, was with another good friend of mine who's a Jewish girl. involved in the fire service. She's our executive editor. And they were going out to dinner the other night, and she sent me a tweet, and she said, a Jew and a Muslim walk into a barbecue restaurant. And she took the picture of the two of them going in. She goes, go figure, right?
And right.
Like, you couldn't make that stuff. Only a firefighter would see the irony in that. You know, a Jew and a Muslim hanging out together, walking into a pork joint, have dinner. And so, you know, your head explodes with the, you know, you want to talk about people who really judge people by the content of their character and not by the color of their skin.
Right.
It's the true firefighter. Now, does every now and then some idiot slip in under the tent? Absolutely. But those people generally find a way to get themselves out. You know, they generally do something, you know, that makes us ask them to leave or forces them to leave. The 99.9%, and you said it earlier, I don't think we get so much in trouble when we're doing contract negotiations, but we sure do get ourselves a black eye when one of us shows up with child pornography, or one of us is a thief, or one of us is a murderer, or one of us is a bad guy. You know,
starts fires, so a volunteer who starts fires so his department can respond more. You're right. Those are absolutely...
Oh, is that a bad thing to do? I'm just kidding. It's a joke.
Of course it's a joke. But yeah, every once in a while it happens. We need to take a break. We've run a little long in the segment, but we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Chief Bobby Halton after these few words. Hold on. Stay tuned. When you're done knocking down the flames, you want to hit the apparatus and head back to the barn, right? Wrong. If you do, you're carrying all types of poisons and carcinogens with you and spreading them wherever you go. But you can clean your gear and yourself before you even leave the scene with a Fireground Decon Kit from the folks at FireTech. This kit contains everything you need to properly and safely decontaminate yourself while still on the scene. This kit includes a pop-up pod for a private changing room, exclusive Fireground Decon hose designed to reduce contamination, all-natural decon towels, a special PPE cleaner formulated to remove stubborn hydrocarbons and that meets NFPA 1851 standard, and more. With a cancer rate among firefighters at 60% against only 20% among the general population, we can no longer ignore the dangers we can't see. For more information, visit their website at www.firegrounddeconstore.com or call FireTech at 954-906-1118. How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There will be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th at the Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough. But one more big surprise. The registration fee is just $125. That's right, a buck and a quarter for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Want to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. That's the Great FloridaFireSchool.org or call 800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School. Be there. And we're back with our special guest, Chief Bobby Halton, on this episode of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for Today's First Responders. And if you listen to this first segment with Chief Halton, you'll just be amazed at the wealth of knowledge he brings to us in the fire service. That's not just fire service knowledge. It's knowledge about life. And I think as we segue into this next topic of firefighter health, wellness, and functional fitness, I think we're going to see the same thing. Now, I'll open by saying that one of the key reasons I got involved in Twitter was that I was very upset each month as I read the listings in online or in the magazines of the line of duty deaths of our comrades, and seeing how many young men and women we were losing to what could be classified as preventable health issues. And it just, every month, it was just like another stab in the heart. And I felt that I needed to find a voice, be able to do it. And I started using Twitter, besides for promotion for our company, I started using Twitter to be that voice. And thankfully, I've had wonderful guests who have backed that up. Dan Kerrigan and Jim Moss were on the show, and with their book about their book. And their, and every day, if you're on Twitter, you need to follow Functional Fitness, Firefighter Functional Fitness, Jim Kerrigan and Dan Kerrigan and Jim Moss, and you will learn so much. But Chief, what have you seen happen, let's say, over the past, let's say 15, 20 years with the whole concept of functional fitness, both for career and for volunteer firefighting?
Oh, it's been a world of change, I think, in my career. I remember one of my earliest experiences, just a quick story, being in the bunk room. And I could tell you how many men at that time were on that. I think it might have been one woman, but mostly men. I think it was like mostly men. At my first assignment was one. I could tell you how many men were in that room by the cigarettes at night from the bunks. Now, it was an open bunk room, and every bunk had an ashtray next to it, just about. You know, you were the odd duck if you weren't a smoker. And, you know, back then it was our diets were what they were, right? And even with smoking, right? That was before the major level of awareness about cancer became a big issue, right? You have to remember that World War II in Vietnam, Korea, the Army, and all branches would issue cigarettes to the soldiers, and because it would calm you down, right?
Right.
And so we didn't really understand the major health risks associated with it. And we didn't understand the major health risks associated with a lot of things, like obesity and poor diet and things of that nature. And a lot of it was individual choice. But and I'm a big proponent of individual choice. But when you decide to be a member of a team or a group, that's an individual choice, and that choice compels you to be responsible to the people that you've decided to associate yourself with. And I think that's given rise to a whole new awareness of personal fitness and health. And Jimmy and Dan do a great job with their firefighter functional fitness. There's a Jordan Pounder up in Wisconsin who's got a tremendous dynamic, it's called Dynamic Fitness Program. And he's a world-renowned physical fitness expert. There's the O2X folks, which is Paul McCullough and Adam LaRue, who are former Navy SEAL officers, who put together an entire package that goes functional fitness, diet, mental health, and it's called O2X. And that's an incredibly fantastic, complex, and great program. That's just an amazing, amazing deal. There's some really, really cool people out there doing some really, really cool things about it. But I think where it came from, and I think as it evolves, is that we understand that aside from folks dying of heart attacks and strokes and things like that, which can happen to you. One of my, if you think about some of the great runners, Jim Fix and people like that,
right,
died of a heart attack. I mean, just because you're thin and lean and in shape. And I run, full disclosure, I run 15 miles a day, but just on the elliptical to deal with some of my health conditions and keep me fit. That doesn't mean I couldn't keel over from a heart attack tomorrow. Arteriosclerotic disease, sudden cardiac death, a lot of that is still unknown to us, right? And it can be precipitated by all kinds of things, right? So that being said, we're just human, Steve would be proud of me. I did an exhaustive study, and I found out that nobody gets out alive.
Right.
You know, so it's there's one guy on my side that I think that did, but other than that, right, being a Christian, but other than that, it's pretty much universal that, you know, you're going to pass at some point. And even he passed and then came back. So, there's a and just hope no one takes offense to a Christian joke. If you do, you probably shouldn't be a firefighter. But right?
Exactly.
So anyway, the physical fitness movement, functional fitness, physical fitness, and what all these guys that I just mentioned are doing, helps us to avoid injuries that are avoidable if you know how to apply the right technique to lifting, to exercising, to doing the job, right? Advancing hose, throwing ladders. And if you exercise those muscle groups correctly, they'll be tuned to do those tasks. So that's a huge, I'm so happy to see that. What's interesting is that, again, we reflect society. So we don't smoke as much. We don't eat, foods. What's also fascinating is that, off the air, we were talking about a great book that I love called Pendulum. But everything in life is almost like a pendulum. My dad once told me, don't throw out your skinny ties, because ties can only do one thing, wide and fat, right?
Right.
So we've had movements where all you should eat was meat, never eat meat. I
eggs.
Think Aristotle said it best.
Don't eat
all
eggs.
Things in moderation.
Moderation.
Right. I mean, if you want to have an occasional steak, good for you. If you want to have and I even take it to smoking. If you want to have a cigar at your brother-in-law's wedding, knock yourself out, right? I mean, and now albeit understand that you might be that one person who that one cigar might give you cancer. Yeah, and there are folks like that out there, right? Our genetic code has a lot to do with our susceptibility. So I'm not promoting smoking, but nor do I think we should fire some kid because he does choose to smoke. That, I think, for me, is a problem. And I hear, we're a smoke-free fire department. We'll bully for you. So you're going to take something that's absolutely legal and vilify it so that people can't do it. So basically all you do then is your best guy or gal is going to go to her sister's wedding. She's going to have a cigar. Someone's going to snap a picture of it, throw it on Twitter. And now the best woman you ever hired, you're going to fire. Great, brilliant, wonderful plan. Now, I'm not a proponent of those kinds of draconian rules, especially for something that's completely legal. Whole different story, if it was a criminal activity.
Right.
But it's legal, right? But so our health stuff has gone to such a great level, and people are really starting to get it. But what's fascinating to me, and I'll share this with you, Steve, because I think it's kind of fun to think this way. I love uncertainty and randomness, and I always tell people I'm stumbling headlong into complete uncertainty about everything. And I am, trust me. I'm probably the stupidest man on the face of the planet.
I
prove it to
that.
Myself every day. But so anyway, Seneca once said, he had a brilliant quote, and I'm going to screw it up. It's one of my favorite quotes, but he said, generations from now, he said, he said, the study of the sky, although a man might devote his entire lifetime to it, would not be enough time for the study of so vast a subject. He said, generations from now, our descendants will be amazed at the things we did not know, that to them are so plain, right? He said, some knowledge is just reserved for future generations because it's going to take time to evolve. And he's so correct in that. I mean, if you look at almost every theory, every scientific theory, every known has at some point either evolved, been debunked, or been thrown out and come back, right?
Right.
So I think that, and it's fascinating because if you look at the current debate about climate change, for example, it revolves around the accuracy of those models, right? And some folks say that because there's not a good model, that we shouldn't work with it. And other folks say that we need to look at the model hard, right? And then there's always the whole skepticism thing. And the climate's always been changing. There's always been a certain amount of climatic change because of the rotation of the axis of the Earth and the activity of the sun and all that other good stuff. We've got to remember that the landmass was once big one landmass and it broke apart and different parts of the world have been underwater and now they're not underwater. And we know all that, right? But we don't have any real precise models for climatic change, that does not mean it should be a reason to pollute the environment significantly, because that's another problem, right? So we've got to look at that. But what's important to talk about is the degree of uncertainty in anything, right? Whether it's physical fitness, whether it's how we eat, whether it's climate change. If we see that something is large enough that it could have an impact, we should pay attention to it, like smoking, right?
Correct.
So, you know, I'm not saying go smoke, but I'm also saying, you know, don't fire people. And then people say, but chief, you've had cancer and you understand this and we shouldn't go there. I understand. Believe me. We also, if we're going to be that much of a jihadist, we should be an alcohol-free fire department.
Right.
Because most careers I know that were destroyed had something to do with alcohol or drugs, but alcohol predominantly through my career. I've seen the people who I love the most in my life destroyed by alcohol. Two of the people I love more than anything in the entire world destroyed by alcohol. And alcohol is full of sugar, and tumors and cancer love sugar. So if we're going to be honest about cancer and we're going to be honest about fitness, well, we should be an alcohol-free fire department. So I think that as we go through it, and I love what we're doing, I think it's wonderful. I think everything needs to be done in moderation. I think everything needs to be done with an eye towards how do I do this so that it doesn't become, you know, tyrannical, but that it's useful. Never pollute, don't smoke. But heck, I own a 1965 Mustang, an A model. I get 8 miles to the gallon. She's gobbling up fossil fuel at a rate that's uncompared to in today's modern technology. But she's a 65A, and you know she's my baby. So you know there's no limits to my hypocrisy. So I'm not going to judge anybody else. But when you look at the stuff that's going on with our physical fitness, it's fantastic. It's just absolutely fantastic. But the best part of it for me, Steve, is the fact that we're now looking at, you know, going to the doctor and getting a rectal done for men and getting a pap done for women and staying ahead of the curve, right? Because if you catch cancer early enough, it's survivable.
Right.
If you intercede early enough, you don't have to become morbidly obese, right? If you, you know, and you don't have to run 15 miles a day. Get up and walk around the block, skip the second, you know, hamburger. You don't have to be doing what was the stuff that my buddy Eddie Buchanan did it. He looked like the Incredible Hulk for a couple of months. PX90. Remember whenever he was doing PX90?
Oh yes.
Do you remember that, Steve?
Yeah.
You don't have to do PX90 every day, but yeah, I should just stretch and lift and spend a little time in the gym. And you know what the best part of that for me, Steve, is?
What?
It clears your mind. It helps you
yes.
think.
Agreed.
It refreshes you. And if you do it correctly, you can do it in a way that it gives you some private time.
Mm-hmm.
The Stoics believe that you should reflect three times a day, at least twice, but three times a day. You should think about in the morning how you're going to manage your day and who you're going to interact with and how you want to come across and what you want to try to accomplish. About midday, you should kind of sit back and say, how am I doing? And then in the evening, you ought to look at how you did that day, who you interacted with, how that went, good, bad. Do you need to apologize? Do you need to catch up? Do you feel like you came across wrong? Do you need to correct something? Do you think you did something really good? Do you want to do it again? And then you should kind of think about tomorrow, right? And
sure.
For a lot of us, if you're practicing religious, you know, a lot of us that's done with prayer. For others, it can just be reflecting. You don't have to be religious. It doesn't have to have anything to do with God. And if you don't believe in God, good for you. I'll pray for you. I'm just kidding. It's a joke. People lose their minds over humor these days. They really do. It's crazy. You listen to the comedians like Jerry Seinfeld and such who say they can't do college campuses anymore because the kids don't know how to take a joke.
Right.
We're going to come down to the world's going to just have knock knock jokes if it continues to devolve like this. It's crazy. But so I think that what's happened is so fantastic, and I think that we're at the beginning of all this. Right. I think that it's just such a neat time, and it's always a neat time to be alive. I mean, ask anybody who's alive. You know, the two things that folks always say about their times is that these are the most challenging times ever, and these are the best times ever. So, you know, it's like the old firefighter joke. What does every firefighter hate? Change in the way things are.
Exactly.
Right? So it's kind of the human condition, right? It's always the most challenging of times, and it's always the most, you know, rewarding of times. And it is. It is. You know, carpe diem, man. Embrace the moment. Go into the weight room right now. Get on the treadmill or the bike or the elliptical. Grab a couple of weights. You know, you don't have to kill yourself, but just, you know, get the heart going and clear your head for a moment. Maybe listen to a little music or poetry or you know, put on a podcast. And this would be, you know, put on a podcast. Listen to something. Turn on the TV. I don't care. Just do something for you for a few minutes. And what you do for you, you do for others. It's altruism is really kind of closely tied to self-preservation, mm-hmm. and that's its own reward. You know, it's kind of a neat dichotomy there. But yeah, I love what's going on with the physical fitness and the well-being stuff. I think it's fantastic, and I think it's really something that we're doing that's without controversy. That's without, you know, I mean, I haven't met anybody yet who's the anti-physical fitness person.
Right.
I just haven't
right.
met that character yet. I'm sure they're out there. God bless them. You know, I'm sure they're out there. You know, and somebody will probably shoot me an email in 5 minutes saying, "No, chief, I belong to the Fat Firefighters Club or whatever." I mean, God bless them. And, you know, if you're a fat guy right now, a fat gal right now, don't get mad at me. I have no problem with people's weight, but you know, I just don't think it's a real club at this point, but I could be wrong. I mean, I could absolutely be wrong, and I apologize in advance if I am. I dig it.
In a strange coincidence, I was just on vacation up in Greensboro. That's where I started my professional career and my career in the volunteer fire service. And we took a trip out to Boone because we, in the 4 years we lived there, we had never gotten further west than Winston-Salem. So we took a trip out to Boone, and while my wife and her girlfriend were shopping, what do? I go out and seek a firehouse. And I found one beautiful firehouse, relatively new, only 2 years old, for the small community. And I was talking with one of the two firefighters who were on duty at that station. And one of them said that he had worked at another department in the greater Boone area. And they had enacted a no smoking, no tobacco. It wasn't just no smoking. They made sure they worded it no smoking, no tobacco. And I noticed when we first started talking and I met him and introduced myself and vice versa, he was chewing. He had some chewing tobacco. He had a chaw. Because in Greensboro, 4 years, a lot of the firefighters I was with would chew tobacco. I tried it once and nearly spit up, so I got rid of that habit very quickly. But he said they, at this department, part of the rule was going to be you could get random swabs any number of times during the month. And so at that point, he decided to resign his post there and look for another post, another department. And while that department is beginning to work on the cancer program, they haven't done anything about, other than the station is no smoking, they haven't said anything else about, you know, non-tobacco as of yet. But he says they are working on the cancer initiative, and he feels very comfortable with that because of the dangers that you know we face, that we find out now that we're facing. And we're actually going to talk about that in our third segment, the Cancer Initiative, and the great people who are working on that. But the fact is that I think what you said about the group is so important that, yes, you can maintain your individuality, but when you voluntarily sign up to be part of a group, you have to work within the group. Everyone can't go do their own thing. We see that on the fire ground with the development.
Unless it violates your honor or your morality. In other words, you know, we talked about striking earlier. I could never strike. I was a union member. I was a member of the union. I would never strike. I wouldn't do it. I couldn't do it. My word is my word. And my first, the only, the first allegiance I took was to my faith and my family, and my next allegiance was to the country, to the Constitution, and down that ladder, then it was my oath to the Union. But I would not strike. I couldn't, like you mentioned earlier, it wasn't in your heart either to do that. So and that's a moral decision I would have to make. And blessedly, it never came up for me. I never had to do that. But, and just so folks know, I'm best friends with Harold Shakespeare, and I'm a member in good standing with the IAFF. But we have the right to dissent. And yes. And I agree. You join a group or you join the department. But if someone asks you, it's the same thing in the military. You do not have to obey an unlawful order. You don't have to, you don't have to do something that violates morality or your conscience. That's why they were called conscientious objectors. They were folks who, throughout history and most recently, the celebrated movie Heartbreak Ridge with the story, his name escapes me wrong, but the young Seventh-day Adventist who went to war in World War II and saved 75 soldiers' lives, never fired a shot.
Right.
Amazing story, true story. So, but taking a life would violate his moral convictions, and you have a right to your moral convictions, whatever they are, right? You do not have to violate them.
Right, and, exactly.
But you need to be clear about that with your partners, too. In other words, in his case, he told the Army, I won't use a gun. I'll go, but I won't use a gun. And so that's the just way to do that, right? You've got to be honest with the group about your boundaries, and we all have boundaries. So you've got to be just about your boundaries. You've got to be honest about your boundaries. Some of my boundaries are, I believe in the Constitution where it said life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If him chewing tobacco makes him happy, God bless him.
Right.
If he understands the risk that he could, his teeth and oral cancer and possibly death could result, that's his choice. I've been very sick with cancer and there's things I shouldn't do. The other day I went out water skiing. If my wife and my doctors knew about that, they'd kill me. They'd be like, you're an idiot, right? I need to avoid sugar, but I'm addicted to orange juice. And last night I ate some bundt cake on my wedding anniversary with my wife. I ate cake and ice cream. Right. We're all going to, again, nobody gets out alive. And I think we just need to be more understanding and more, should we discourage smoking? Absolutely. Absolutely. Should we outlaw it? I don't think so. It's like marijuana. I don't care if people smoke marijuana. I don't want them to smoke marijuana and drive. I don't think we need another intoxicating substance. But it's not up to me to make that decision. It's not up to me to say that they shouldn't be able to do that. Full disclosure, I don't care if you want to put heroin in your body. That's your business. Just don't ask me to pay for your medical care or pay to bury you when it kills you. So it's crazy. I mean, we've gotten to the point where everybody wants to run everybody else's life.
Exactly.
They think they know better. Golly, we might as well get kings and queens back instead of, and we've just about done that with our Congress and our congressmen, our senators, and dukes and lords now. They never let go of their titles. I hate that stuff. They don't own those titles. That belongs to the position and the people. When you're no longer a congressman, you're just Joe Smith again. You're not Congressman Smith anymore, governor anybody. Now, attained rank is different. You're always captain in the fire service or the military or the police department because that's attained rank, different. But we've created these elite constructs where people want to tell people, what to do with their lives, and that violates the basic fundamental premise of what America is, where you can practice your own religion, where you can speak your mind, where you can pursue what makes you happy. And if having a cigarette from now and then makes you happy, well, good for you. You know what I mean? Do you lose your presumptive? Absolutely. You shouldn't be covered by presumptive. Will it shorten your life? You betcha. Is it a stupid habit? Absolutely. Should you be fired for it? I don't think so. Should you be excluded from, being a member of the fire service? I disagree. And Billy Goldfeder hates me for that. He yells at me all the time for having that position. But I believe in the Constitution. I really do. I believe in America. And I think if someone took that to the Supreme Court, they'd win. I don't think that's constitutional.
I agree. Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. It's to me, it's something I did. I did as a kid when I was in a band in high school because it was cool to be cool like that. And then once I got to college, I dropped cigarettes and I was smoking the little kind of cigars, Tijuana, I forget what they were called, those little mini cigars.
Cigarillos.
Yeah, little cigarillos, stuff like that. That as I got older, I started smoking a pipe as my dad had. He had was smoking cigarettes for many years. And then after his first heart attack, his cardiologist put him on a pipe. His cardiologist also had switched from cigarettes to a pipe. And my dad smoked the pipe. And once a week when he would go out to the garage to polish our shoes for that week for school, he had a cigar. But it was always just a store-bought cigar, not a cigar pavilion or anything like that. And then I stopped. I just gave it up and smoked cigars for a while. There was a nice club that opened down the street from where I live here. And I enjoyed it. I'd have maybe one, maybe two an entire week. But my wife was getting concerned. And we do have cancer in the family. And I said, you know what? You're right. I enjoy it. And it's time there that I get to relax. But the fact is that I gave it up. And for the past 2 years, a little more, and then this year, a past year of doing the podcast, I feel more, and having been disabled in 1992 from a back injury that originally happened in the fire service. We just didn't know it at the time, didn't discover it till 92. And being bedridden for a while and stuff and not doing much, I feel so much better now as a person. And I'm involved. Every day I'm in my little den office, as you are right now, and I look at the stuff around me. I do the work for my podcast, as you do for the magazines and FDIC and everything like that. And I feel fulfilled that way, and I don't miss having the cigar. I started walking. I got a new device implanted in my back in June. It's made an amazing change in my life, reducing the pain level dramatically. I started walking several weeks ago, and now I'm up to a mile and a half, 2 miles a day in my neighborhood. And I dropped 15 pounds.
I hope folks listening understand, and we're going to talk more about cancer in the next segment, but as we're having this conversation, where I'm saying I don't have a problem with people smoking or drinking or, you know, doing what they do to make them happy, I'm staring at my Founders Award for the Firefighter Cancer Support Network that I got from presented to me by Mike DeBron. So I was the first recipient of the Founders Award for the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. So, you know, we talked about hypocrisy earlier. You know, there's no limits when you're talking about me.
I disagree, Chief. I don't think it's hypocrisy. You were given that award, I'm sure, because they felt that you were one of the first big names to actually embrace the fact that we needed to reduce smoking or eliminate smoking within the fire service, not outlawing it. And the fact that you, right, outside of that situation, you believe that people have personal freedoms, I don't think is being hypocritical for that. And I think that award is well deserved.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm not saying I don't work for Marlboro or anybody else. I don't work for Philip Morris. I'm not trying to create smokers. I'm just saying that I truly believe in personal choice. I truly believe in the pursuit of happiness. And originally Jefferson said property, he changed it to happiness, which is kind of interesting. But I really believe in that. And I think that we always need to keep that in the middle. We can become, it's so easy to become tyrannical. I do it all the time. I find myself all the time being tyrannical. And so please, I hope folks listening understand that I'm not promoting anything unhealthy. I'm just saying that we all have weaknesses. Sometimes we indulge them. As long as they're not, in my opinion, damaging anyone else or immoral or you know, illegal.
And they don't impede. They don't impede on the job.
Yeah, if it doesn't infringe on the freedom and liberty of others, good for you. Good for you. I'm jumping out of a plane on September 20th to raise money for burnt soldiers and firefighters for a group called Sons of the Flag. Okay.
That's amazing.
With my cancer and my health issues, that's the stupidest thing I could possibly do. I mean, it's just nuts. You know, the odds of me breaking something or smashing something or destroying something that'll never heal are pretty high.
But think of how much oxygen you're going to take in.
Hell yeah.
After that first scream.
If you take away my chance to have fun and live, you know, I'm not going to do it. One of the people I admire absolutely the most in my whole life, one of the people who is one of my absolute heroes, was Sergeant John Baslone. And a lot of people don't know who Baslone was. He was in the United States Marine Corps. He won the Medal of Honor. And after winning the Medal of Honor, of course, they brought him back to the States and paraded him around and said, "Oh, great, John, blah, blah, blah. You know, we need you to go raise money." He said, "Bull, I'm going back." His line was, "I'm staying with my boys." And he went back and he died there.
Mm-hmm.
He was killed in battle. And so I'm staying with my boys and girls now. I'm staying with the troops.
Right.
I don't care. My favorite, my tagline for my life that I stole from another one of my heroes, Marcus Aurelius, who, and again, for all of his wonderful stuff that Marcus Aurelius did, probably the greatest emperor of Rome, one of the greatest men that ever walked the face of the planet, he was tragically flawed. He allowed for the slaughter of millions and millions of Christians. I mean, the whole thing that was going on there. But Marcus Aurelius, once in a great quote, he talked about, "Regardless of what anyone says or does, for my part, I must remain true to who I am. I'm bound to the good," right? He said, just as purple or gold or orange must say, I don't think it was orange, but purple or gold must always proclaim what they are, I too must proclaim what I am. I'm bound to the good and so true to my colors. And that's what I believe. I believe that as a firefighter, I'm bound to the good and therefore true to my colors. And I think that part of goodness is being accepting. And just because what someone's doing to themselves is destructive or dangerous doesn't give me any right to stop them. It just doesn't.
Right.
You know, I'll go clean up the mess afterwards. Just like I hope if the parachute doesn't open, I hope somebody digs a hole and throws me in it. But I'm jumping, you know, I'm going to do it. And
that's amazing. It really is. I really admire that feeling that you have, and to do that, and with everything that you have. With the luggage that you have, that you carry through life, you're willing to put something else on your back and give it a try for the betterment and for the wellness of others. And
well, I've done it before as a kid, as a young man. I jumped out of planes, but I'm in my mid 60s now, so doing it in my mid 60s with health issues is a radically different proposal. So it's and trust me, a lot of it is just because it's a lot of fun. I mean, there's nothing like jumping out of an airplane. I mean, for a few seconds, you're a bird. You know
right.
what I mean? Which is pretty cool stuff. I mean, trust me, a lot of it is self-serving. I mean, I'm doing it because it's going to be an absolute blast. You know, I'm not that. Trust me. I hope people model their lives after somebody a lot more successful and better than me. I always told my wife, I hope someday I grow up enough to be the man that my sons deserved. My three boys are my heroes. They're all 10 times the man I could have ever hoped to be. And they're just in their 30s, and they're just wonderful men. But, I always loved what the sergeant said. I'm staying with my boys. At the time, they were all men. For me, I'm staying with the troops because I'm bound to the good. I still volunteer out here in Owosso, Oklahoma, the Limestone Fire Protection District. Mostly I do training for them, but I'm a volunteer there, and I love what we do. We're firefighters. Someone once said to me, Steve, and I think you relate to this, and I know we're way off topic here, but I asked a young lady one time, I do this class called American Command and Leadership, and it's not about command as a function, but as a lifestyle. I'll be down in West Palm on the 30th doing it, or the 31st doing it again. I have some great quotes in there, but one of the questions, I was doing the class and a young lady was there. She was a volunteer firefighter, about 19 years old, gorgeous young gal who was, totally into it, really exciting to be talking to. But every time she made a comment, she kind of threw stones at her group, right? The folks she volunteered with, which was kind of funny, and it was good natured stones, right? So I kind of kidded her. I said, well, if you don't like those folks so much, why do you volunteer? Why are you down there? And she goes, I like to help people. I thought that was brilliant. I mean, it was the most honest answer about why people firefight that I ever heard. Wrote an editorial about it. I loved it. So I'm thinking about it one day, and I realized that she was wrong. Firefighters don't become firefighters because they like to help people. Firefighters, and the reason it came to me, I'll tell you in a second, become firefighters because they have to help people. It's how we're wired. We're bound to the good. We cannot deny who we are. We have to be true to our colors. And here's when it dawned on me. I'm driving down the highway. I'm going to pick up my wife, who's got issues. So I had to get there to grab her from the airport. And there was a lot of stuff going on. And I saw a car on the side of the road. And I looked over at it. And for a second, I thought, gosh, it didn't look like it had any help. And it looked like to be two or, a couple of people there. I couldn't tell how old they were. And I had to drive past them. And that bugged me for 6 months. I couldn't get those people or that car out of my head. Don't know why they were pulled over. Don't understand what. But you've done it, and every firefighter listening to me right now knows that exact same experience, because even though I don't know anything about modern cars, I look under the hood today and I don't even understand what's going on. But we would have flipped that hood open. I would have stood there with the poor guy or gal whose car was broke down and said, yeah, it looks like your flux capacitor is screwed. I don't know what the heck, right? We would have made stuff up, right, to make each other feel good until help came, right?
Right.
Because we have to help people, like the swans to Capistrano, like the salmon up the river. It's who we are. We're bound to the good. And it dawned on me like Saul on the road to Damascus. Boom, it hit me, man. I was like, wow, we really are who Marcus Aurelius said we are. We're bound to the good. It's just who we are. We have to help if we can help. How many times, and I'm going to tell you, Steve, you could probably give me a dozen examples, that you've gone over to help somebody and you had absolutely no idea what you were doing.
Absolutely.
But you were going to pitch in and help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been out of active fire service since 1985, but I have every day since that day I left, I have had a BLS jump bag in my car. I cannot tell you how many times, even after my back injury, how many times I have pulled over. I've been the first or second on the scene of an emergency. Hand my phone to my wife if she's with me, have her call 911, and I get in the midst of whatever it is. If it's an overturned vehicle.
Okay, and that's a perfect example. Remember what we said earlier about don't throw out your skinny ties?
Right.
And science? When you and I started, and we're the same age, when you and I started, it was all about what? The airway. Don't worry about compressions. Just ventilate, ventilate, ventilate.
Right.
What is it now?
Compressions.
Compressions, compressions, compressions. It's a skinny tie, buddy. It's a skinny tie.
Exactly. Exactly. And
just... Oh, the science has changed. My favorite movie of all time. And we're just having too much fun. You're going to have to edit the nonsense out of this tape. But you'll relate to this. One of my favorite movies of all time was Sleeper with Woody Allen, right?
Oh, great.
He was a health food store owner, and he gets his wife, puts him to sleep to have his appendix out. He wakes up 200 years later, and everybody's smoking and eating chocolate because they found out health food was what was killing everybody. Oh, I laughed so hard at my side saying
that was a great, great film.
Wonderful.
It was.
One of the greatest movies of all time.
And just in July, we were at a picnic lunch on July 4th. And somebody said to me, because I said, well, I got to get back. I got to edit a podcast, my last one before I take a break. And he said, you're over 65, right? And I said, yeah. He says, you've been out of active service for over 30 years. I said, yeah. He goes, so what the hell are you still bothering with this crap for? I said, excuse me? I said, excuse me? You asked the wrong person the wrong question. Firefighting is who I am. It is part of my life since the day I signed on to be a volunteer. I said, it's just my, it's my internal nature. My wife knows it. My wife accepts it. It is who I am, and it will be who I am until I receive that invitation to visit the pearly gates. And even then, my wife already knows that even though I can't belong, I don't belong currently to a department because there's no volunteers in my area out of Broward County, I know she knows that I want something at my final service that reflects the fire service. And that's because it is. It is who I am. It is what I do, I told him. And that's not going to change. It will never change.
Yeah. You know? God bless you. It's just like the Marine Corps. There's no former Marines.
Right.
There's no former fire. There's no former firefighters. You're a firefighter. And Crocker had it right. Your greatest act of bravery was signing up. You know, I always love when people dismiss other firefighters because they worked in, you know, and I'm just going to say, no disrespect to my friends in Pocatello, Idaho, but, you know, Wagon Wheel or Pocatello. And I'm like, come on, seriously? They signed up for the same exact risk as the guy in Detroit or the gal in San Francisco or the gal in New York City or the guy in Broward County or the fella in Gary, Indiana. The risks are the same for every single firefighter because we're fragile and the risk is losing your life. And it can happen anywhere. And so Crocker had it right. It's not where you worked or how much you worked. It's why and how much you put into it. And that's what duty is about. And duty is an important word. We lost that word after the 1970s. The Army got rid of it. The fire service got rid of it because the thought at the time was that duty was too much of a construct to be thrust upon people. And they wanted to replace it. They were worried about people using their careers for self-aggrandizement. So they decided to use words that are undefinable, like selfless service. And see, you can't define it. You can't measure it. But duty, you can measure, right? You can define it. And we all get to define what that is. For you right now, your duty is these podcasts. And these are invaluable. I mean, I don't know. We've thrown out a gazillion different topics while we've been talking and ideas. One of them is going to resonate with some firefighter out there who's going to take it to a completely another level. Someone's going to hear some comparison or some contradiction and gain some tremendous insight because they were curious enough to listen to this podcast. That's a tremendous service. You have people like Jim Moss and Danny Carrigan on. They're brilliant, incredibly talented, super generous, decent men who are changing how we approach health and wellness. That's a fantastic thing to do. That's back in the day, we'd call that God's work. I have no problem saying that. I mean, one of the topics I sent to Steve was two pensions and a bad attitude, which defines me. what are you going to do? Take away my birthday? I mean, cancer's been trying to do that since 1995. Get in line.
Sure.
I don't have any problem telling people what I think to be the truth, and I could be completely wrong. I don't have to be. You don't have to be wrong for me to be right, and I don't have to be wrong for you to be right. We can both be right, given our view of the world, given our constructs, given where we live, given how we feel about things, right? I mean,
absolutely.
I believe in God. Some of my best friends are atheists. That doesn't make them bad people or wrong. Doesn't make me a bad person or wrong. It's just another way to look at the world. And firefighters do that. We allow people to be who they are. We need to be careful about this new highfalutin, I'm better than you are nonsense that's going on in Western society today, this shaming and this, moral superiority gibberish that's going around our elite political class and elsewhere. Because trust me, every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. And if you don't believe me, man, look at my checkered past. And I pray every day, and I hope that every day I'm better than I was the day before. And so far, it's working out for me. And I've gone from being the lowest form of life to being just slightly above, whale poop, as we used to say in the academy.
I think you've risen a little bit above that. So
you're giving me a little more credit than I deserve. Trust me, I know me better than you.
I know you. You know you better than I do, but everything I've done to research and study you, read you, shows me that at least in the area that I have my most interest in, which is my duty and my humanity, you're right up there.
Well, I love being alive, and I love people, and I love the fire service, and I've been so blessed, Steve. I'm married to the most lovely woman on the face of the planet. Yesterday, we celebrated 44 years together.
Congratulations.
We've got a great dog named Izzy, who's just a completely devoted golden retriever, which if you don't own a golden retriever, you've missed the greatest possible blessing in life.
I've had mine. She was wonderful. You're right.
I had wonderful parents. I had tremendous experiences. I've met some of the most elegant and beautiful people in the world through the fire service. I've had the chance to have, yesterday I spoke to this beautiful young man who's from Florida, Joe, and I'll butcher his last name, Magic House, I believe that's how he says it. Anyway, he was a Honeywell scholarship recipient last year and came to the show, and he met me, and he wanted to know I'm going to be down in Florida if I want to have dinner and visit his fire department. And he was so proud of his fire department, and he told me how he had recently taken a demotion so that he could spend more time with his wife and his three kids because his kids were young. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and I listened to that, and I thought, holy cow. And he said it so casually. I mean, he wasn't bragging about it. He wasn't boasting about it. He just said it because that's honestly why he did it. And I thought, man, that's a good man. That's a good dad. You know what I mean? I want to get to know this guy better. You know what I mean? And I've been so blessed to meet guys like that. Guys like you. I mean, I wake up every day and I keep thinking God's going to look in that book someday and say, Halton, we give all these blessings to Halton. I said Dalton, you idiot. You know, he's going to be pissed off. I mean, I can't imagine a better life. I can't imagine a better opportunity. I'm so grateful. I just can't tell you how blessed I am. And I just can't tell you how lucky I've been. I can't tell you, I don't deserve what I have. And I don't know how I got it. I mean, I don't know how I ever fell into this incredible woman or these incredible children or this incredible family or this incredible fire service. I mean, I really don't, I can't figure it out. And luckily, I'm not smart enough to try. So I'm rolling with the punches at this point. But man, I'll tell you, I'm so grateful for you and this opportunity. I know that I feel bad for you because you're going to be editing for 3 days. This is the worst interview you've probably ever had.
I'm not sure. This might be one of the best shows I've ever had.
You're sitting there saying, why did I call this idiot? What were we supposed to talk about? So I think we're going to go to cancer next. Right? There's some great stuff happening with cancer. There's some neat stuff to talk about with cancer.
All right. So we're going to take a break for a few moments, and when we come back with our third segment, our final segment, we're going to talk with Chief Halton about the Cancer Initiative in the Fire Service. So we'll be right back right after these words. Stay tuned.
If spring is here now, summer is right around the corner. Maybe you work in the hot sun day in and day out. How about standing in line at the amusement parks with the kids? Just how can you keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Open your cool towel pack, remove the towel, and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neckline like a kerchief. Wipe your face, your arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up a little? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times, and cool towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowelsonline.com or call 1-800-918-8323.
How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There'll be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th at the Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough. But one more big surprise. The registration fee is just $125. That's right, a buck and a quarter for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Want to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. That's thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School. Be there. And we're back with our third segment with Chief Bobby Halton. It's been an amazing podcast so far. There's just been so much to hear, so much to listen to, so much to learn, so much to think about, Chief. I think you've given me, and I know you've given the listeners, so much new thought, so much new kind of thinking that actually isn't brand new. It's your knowledge that you've shared, your way of thinking that hopefully, well, I know it's opened my eyes in many areas, and will do the same thing for our listeners. Because I guess I've, up until this point, I really had a somewhat myopic view of the fire service and the role of life and the role in America and things like that. And I think you've opened my eyes quite a bit to new things. I've actually taken many notes of stuff that I want to look up that you've mentioned in the podcast today. But at the moment...
You realize that almost every single one of our founding fathers was a volunteer firefighter.
Yes. Yes. And
virtually all of them participated in the fire protection of their communities.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And as a matter of fact, we have a very close relationship with the Philadelphia Fire Department. We filmed our first two pilots at the Firemen's Museum in Philadelphia. They were an amazingly cooperative group at that time, as was the film office. And then now with our new project, which is a dramatic project, though based on an aspect of the Philadelphia Fire Department, CSI and the firehouse. Again, the city is, Commissioner Thiel has already said he's interested to work with us if it gets picked up. The film office is interested. They've been trying to help us get interest in the production area of it. And we love the city. It's just, my wife has family there, and I would always visit either the volunteer houses in Montgomery County or the career houses in the city of Philadelphia. Always warm welcome. And I always said, if I could ever do anything in film or television, I'd love to do it in the city of Philadelphia. I just think that's so rich. And knowing that the volunteer fire department was created by Franklin there, they still have, at the Fireman's Museum, they have the original horse trough that they drank from that was in front of that first firehouse, which is a little bit up the block from where the museum is. But they have that in front of the museum. And just to walk by that and touch that and know the importance, and almost like magic, you touch, put your finger there and you feel history, and like in a TV show or a film, drawing you back to those days when they had horses all geared up and the firefighters were waiting for the bugle to sound to respond. So it's a great city, and the fact that volunteer firefighting was really born there and just outside the environs is a fact that was never lost on us. We're very proud of the connection we have to that city and look forward to actually having the opportunity to feature them in either the show version of Cause and Origin or the film, whichever version gets picked up. And speaking of Philadelphia, that was a great segue, is that they are one of the major cities along with New York, Boston, Chicago, I believe LAFD, I'm not sure about LA County, but LAFD, have joined strongly in the cancer initiative to reduce firefighters' exposure to cancer. That I think we're finally learning, but I think we're learning a little bit too late for some, definitely. We don't know, and I guess those of us like you and I who were in the early days where we didn't always have to wear SCBA and we would dive in and do the job. I know when I worked, even when we responded with EMS, or then I also worked for EMS for almost a year, we didn't wear gloves in those days. There was no need to wear gloves on the average call. And yet now, all these years later, many of us have had been diagnosed with some forms that may have been prevented if we knew about it earlier on. But maybe we can say that science has medicine have thankfully progressed that we can find it now? Or do we look at condemn science for all the crap that's in the materials that we live with every day that when they burn are the things that can cause cancer? How would you look at it?
Well, there's a couple of things you throw out in there, and I think they're all interesting points. One of the things is that, you know, looking backwards is really important, understanding history and all that good stuff, right? And I get that. But unforeseeable consequences from folks' activities is hard to demean or hold accountable when they were unaware of the consequences. And when you look at the polymer-based economy and what it's done for mankind, things like IV bags and things of that nature wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the polymer-based evolution, which is responsible for saving umpteen lives. You know, you couldn't put a number on it. And the polymers in and of themselves aren't good or bad or right or wrong. It's learning how to live with them intelligently, right?
Correct.
So one of the things that people forget is that all of the products you mentioned and hydrocarbons are constantly off-gassing. What happens to firefighters is we're exposed to that off-gassing in quantities that are incredibly lethal and volatile, right? So when we look at products like the polymers and anything that's so that basically anything that's been made with oil into a couch, a chair, a bed, the foam, we have to remember that what we call something being on fire is just decomposition, right? And because they're polymers, all polymers go through what's called slow decomposition at normal temperatures, just like anything else, except that because they're polymers, they're man-made, and they're made under pressure and heat, they have bonds that are weaker than natural bonds, right? And all of man-made products have what are called defects or cracks. And one of the best examples of decomposition of a polymer, I raised three boys. And every June, my wife and I would put on Lovely suits and go upstairs and clean their bathroom because we raised three boys, right? And there's all kinds of schmegma. But my job was always to do the shower curtain. And you take down a year-old shower curtain. It was very stiff and very brittle. And you put it into a bag and overpack it and put it out in the drum with the other contaminants to clean the bathroom. I'd open up the new shower curtain, and oh, you get that wonderful smell would come out of it, you know, right. That new shower curtain smell. Oh, and you'd hang it up, and you'd stand there smelling it, and it's nice and soft and supple. Well, you're sucking in hydrogen cyanide gas, so that, it's that wonderful smell. And other gases that were captured in that package is what you're smelling, right?
Sure.
And then so what happened to that shower curtain over the year is the slow decomposition, right? If it caught fire, you would accelerate that decomposition, right, with unusual heating, intertwining the chemical and physical degradation. The chemical degradation means a loss of the parts of the molecule, and the physical degradation is a change in the physical characteristics, the strengths, dimension, the color, or the integrity of that particular product. It's autocatalysis in its simplest terms, right? And then we have what we call the temperature of quantitative decomposition, right? And when we get to that level of activity, generally speaking, the gases emitted during decomposition stage of a fire are far more toxic than those emitted during the actual burning, right? So once it starts to burn, you hit a whole nother stage. That's called high temperature oxidative pyrolysis. And when you hit that point, you're getting the release of other products. During high temperature oxidative pyrolysis, carbon monoxide is produced and the respiratory tract can be exposed to corrosive acids and gases and particles of soot. And carbon monoxide then acts on your hemoglobin, right? And that marries up with your red blood cells, preventing oxygen from transferring and creating this what's called carboxyhemoglobin, right? So just because CO has a much greater affinity, we all know that, right? The acidic gases and particles can injure the tissue in three ways, right? Direct chemical burns, accumulation of fluids, right? Lung edema and hemorrhaging, all of that goes on. And then the protein at the basement member mixes with serum proteins and form the edema that causes the hemorrhaging and the hyalalic membrane and becomes a formal barrier to anybody breathing good gases in and out gases, right? So we got a lot going on when we talk about plastics and fires, but whether we're talking about polyvinyl chloride or urethane foam, or we're talking about polystyrene, all of those products, for all their downfall, have provided a level of living and comfort and everything we're doing right now, Steve. If you think about it, the chair you're sitting on, the machine you're recording me on, the headset you're wearing, the carpet you're standing on, is all a result of those polymers. Learning about those polymers. One of the things we need to teach people is there's always slow decomposition, so you should always open your doors and windows in your home or your building as often as you possibly can to make sure that you let good air in and bad air out. And I'm not saying we should pollute, but what I am saying, we need to understand what happens to those polymers in fire is deadly. But it's equally deadly when you burn a piece of wood. Because you have to remember that a piece of wood, people get this thing like it's okay to stand around a campfire because you're still getting a lot of good oxygen. But if you just held somebody's face over the smoke from a campfire, that'll kill you too.
Right.
Right. It's going to do the same exact thing. You get acrolein, you get all kinds of chemicals being off-gassed by wood. Or take wool, naturally occurring product. You got hydrogen cyanide pouring off of wool as it burns. So I don't think there's a whole lot of value in demonizing or the plastics industry or any other industry for the use of polymers. But what's important is learning to live with it and learning to live with it in a healthy, responsible way, and then approaching the fires that it's involved in a healthy and intelligent way. Right? One of the first articles in Fire Engineering that I remember pulling out about plastics and fire was from 1945. And the firefighter wrote about fighting fires in the modern fire environment. That was 1945, and he was writing about polymer-based fires and polymer-based environments. So I always chuckle when I hear people say today's modern fire environment. Well, in 45, it was modern. Today, it's just the fire environment.
Right.
It's not modern. It's been the predominant fire environment since the early 60s. It just is what it is because, go back to the Graduate movie with Dustin Hoffman when he was in his 20s and the guy says one word, plastics.
Plastics.
Well, Dustin Hoffman is 73 or 74, boys and girls. So, that movie is now 40 or 50 years old. So, the whole, I don't think there's any value in demification of any product or
that wasn't
or
what I meant.
Like
that wasn't what I meant to do. I was just talking about the
changes. I get you. But we tend to do that, right? There's a great historical story, too, about it. And remember, about the Nobel Peace Prize and all of that. I don't agree with how the Swedes have been handling it. But do you know where that came from? Alfred Nobel invented dynamite.
Dynamite, yes.
And when his brother died in Paris, the headline said, Le marchand de moté est moté. And which means the merchant of death is dead. And they thought they were talking about Alfred, but it was his brother. So Alfred sees his headline. He becomes mortified that he's going to be remembered as this man who created the most lethal weapon in the world. And so he hurriedly creates the Nobel Prize, and that's how that whole thing became.
Interesting.
It's the vilification of nitroglycerin and dynamite. And oddly enough, in the irony of ironies, Nobel took nitroglycerin for a heart condition. So, yes. You know, it had terrible uses, it had great uses. I remember
when my dad, I was young, I was about 8 years old, my dad had his first heart attack, and he showed me this bottle of pills, and it said nitroglycerin. I said, oh, my God, Dad, be very careful the way you handle it. I said, I've seen it on TV. That stuff can blow up. Just be careful. How can you put that in? But he said, no, this is a good kind that will help me if I have chest pains. And I said, are you sure it's not going to blow up in the house? He says, no.
But here's where we are. And there's another neat story. I'll give you the editorial, and it'll probably be out before folks read this. But so the other day in the airport bathroom, this young kid came running in with his dad. You know, it's summertime. All the kids are flying with their parents. Young boy uses the bathroom. He starts to run out, and his dad says, Ryan, get back here. Wash your hands. The little boy says, Daddy, Mom's going to, you know, we got to go to the plane. And he says, no, got to wash your hands first. Come on over here. The little boy says, Daddy, where do I wash my hands? So we always wash our hands if we use the bathroom so we don't spread germs. He goes, why? He goes, you could get sick from germs. Germs are bad, and you want to be polite because you have germs on your hands from using the bathroom. And so the little boy washed his hands with his dad, and they walked out. Well, it reminded me of a story. A couple of years ago, there was a young CDC worker who was in Kenya. And at the time, there was this horrible outbreak of dysentery and cholera, and the infant mortality rate was sky high. I want to say like 80%. It was terrible. And people were, you know, ill and dying. And at the time, he noticed the palm olive soap had come out with a new soap that was antibacterial. And I don't know if you remember back then all the antibacterial soaps.
Sure.
So palm olive was looking for a chance to promote their soap. So this young man approached him and said, if you'll give me enough soap to give to all the villagers in this area, he was trying to stop this epidemic in, I'll get you a control group of people who I give the soap to, who I don't give the soap to, and who I give the antibacterial soap to. So the palm olive said, absolutely, because they wanted to show how good this soap was. So they do this, they give out the soap, and within a few months, the infant mortality rate became normal, average. It virtually, you know, went away. Children, you know, started surviving childbirth.
Right.
The child death rate was better. Everything improved except for the group that didn't get any soap, right? So The young man went back to Palmolive with his results. Palmolive was a little upset because there was absolutely zero difference between the antibacterial soap and the regular soap. It was washing their hands
right. That
stopped the spread of disease. So now we're finding out that particulate matter and soot and all of that is damaging. But there's a reality to this story, right? Firefighting is a dirty job. We get dirty from time to time doing this job. That may never change. What can change is our behavior about it. We can wash, and it can be as simple as having a bucket of water and some soap and towels. It can be as simple as having wipes to wipe after the fire. It can be as simple as, you know, just going back and taking a shower. That's, you know, cleaning our tools. That's not a massive cultural shift in anything we're doing right now. Last time I checked, we take showers. Last time I checked, we wash our hands. Last time I checked, we clean our tools. So we're going to be a little more careful about it. It's just common sense, right?
Yes, so, absolutely.
We're not learning anything. And the story about in Kenya, you can go back and look at the outbreaks of disease in Europe when they thought it was bad air. No, it was hygiene, and it was contaminated wells, and you know here's the really interesting part about it. We have, as an industry, have always prided ourselves on cleanliness,
right?
Clean rigs, clean tools, clean people. So I don't see any gigantic paradigm shift, nor do I agree with the people who say we should censor every photograph so that we never show a firefighter with a dirty face, or that we tell the manufacturers and the vendors to not use models with smudges on them to make them look like they just came out of a big fire event.
Uh-huh.
That's just art. And the other pictures of the real people who are dirty is just reality. It's a dirty job sometimes. And that's reality. If you want to play that game, look at the Soviet Socialist Republic, where they only showed photos of the happy family, and they only showed photos of the giant wheat fields, and everything was censored, and everything was phony, and that they were trying to build the Soviet man, and instead they destroyed a culture and created generations of people with alcohol and social functioning issues. It put 80 years of tyranny and oppression were surrounded by that censorship. So I'm loathe about censorship, and I'm also loathe about people who have problems with artistic representation, as if our people that we recruit, our young people, are going to be adversely influenced by these photos or paintings or pictures and think that they should be smudged up and dirty all the time in order to be good firefighters. That's the soft bigotry of low expectations. That's the most condescending, arrogant attitude you could possibly embrace, that you think others are so stupid or so easily influenced or so naive or so ignorant that you have to protect them by censorship and by, the great guardian of the hidden truths. Go Google Between Time and Timbuktu, a Prometheus 5 by Kurt Vonnegut, if you can find the old copy of it, and watch the section about the handicapper general, because you could put in for her job if that's where you're going. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry to go off on you, but there.
That's okay.
I mean, I get involved in these conversations and I look at people like, seriously? You really think that censorship is the answer? Or you really think that washing our hands is some kind of gigantic social movement we need to create? No, wash your damn hands, kid. You got germs on them.
Right.
You and I have both seen people walk out of the men's room without washing their hands. What goes through your head?
That I'm not going to touch that door with my clean hands.
Or I'm not going to shake that clown's hand. Yeah. I hope I don't eat it from the same candy dish that he sticks his mitts into.
Absolutely.
It goes back to what you said earlier about if you join a team, play by the rules, support the team or get off the team. Wash your hands. It's important. And I think one of the things that we're doing with Firefighter Can't Support Network and with other groups and the NFFF, I'm going next month to a gigantic Cancer Palooza meeting with those good folks down in Phoenix. But I think that we're coming up with all kinds of initiatives and such, as we did with the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, with the white paper and the subsequent stuff we're doing now with Poor Michael's Almanac that we're publishing in Fire Rescue, where we're talking about things you can do right now that aren't some gigantic quantum change in what we're doing. It's just an evolution of our intelligence and our understanding of the risks and how to mitigate them, right?
Right.
So washing our hands, taking a shower, for a while it was a big discussion about steam and steam baths, and you can't do that because it opens the pores and that's allowed bad stuff to get in. Well, one of the leading researchers, Kenny Fent, the other day said, no, I think that's a good idea. I think steam's a good idea. And yet people were throwing stones at the Indy Fire Department that just got saunas put in their stations, or putting saunas or some kind of project on those lines.
Hmm.
So, be careful about the experts, be careful about the wizards, be careful about
the man behind the curtain.
The skinny ties, right?
Right.
But the cancer is initiative too, which is funny. And I heard a brilliant doc talk about this. I apologize, I can't remember his name, but he said cancer in the fire service is a good thing. And I sat there going, okay, it hasn't been really great for me. So I was kind of figuring out where he was going with this, right? And he said, that means we're living longer. And I was like, wow, he's right. He's right. We're living longer. We're living longer. And the fact that it's a bigger threat is because, as you said earlier, we're not dying as much to heart attack and stroke and physical ailments. And we're not getting crushed and burned as much as we used to get crushed and burned,
right?
Thermal images, injuries and such. Now it's more health-related stuff. And so it was interesting. He wasn't saying cancer is a good thing. he said it's a good sign. And because cancer tends to be something that repeated exposures and older, you know, every man ever born is born with the prostate cancer lurking somewhere inside your system. It's just whether or not it gets activated and when it gets activated. So, he had a great point. It was a brilliant talk, absolutely brilliant talk.
Yeah,
well, I apologize. I can't remember his name.
I spoke to my oncologist when I started hearing the numbers between the general population and the fire population. And when I said to him, I said, here's the numbers I was given. I said that basically on a yearly basis, about 20% of the American population is touched by cancer. And he says, yes, but 80% of those cancers are simple skin cancers that do not turn to melanoma, that are treated, and that's the end of it. But they're counted in the numbers. So it's the other 20% that you have to worry about. Whereas he feels, and I don't know if he ever has, I didn't ask, but I don't know if he's ever treated firefighters with cancer, but he's a well-renowned oncologist in this area. And he said, whereas the cancers that firefighters receive are usually more often going to be malignant right from the start because of what's causing it. If it's a standard cancer, the common in the population, that's one thing. But he goes, I've seen in my records and my reading that firefighters often, and then he referred back to the results from the 9/11 crew who worked, the people who worked on the pile for those months. He says, I've seen stranger cancers, you know, uncommon cancers affecting in the fire service. So he says, so that's
which goes back to our earlier discussion about decomposition, right?
Exactly.
So because we're exposed to those products, cancers that are related to those products and any product combustion are higher because our exposure rates are exponentially higher.
Exactly. Most folks
don't go walking into highly combustible environments every day. Firefighters do, you know, are carrying our gear around that's contaminated with soot and wearing dirty gear. It contaminates you. Dirty gloves contaminate you. It's not rocket surgery. It's not a big. I see kids on Twitter saying, "Oh, no, it's gloves." Okay, stop it. Grow up. You know, just grow up. Quit being 12.
Right.
You know what I mean? Clean your gloves or get clean gloves. It doesn't make you tough. It doesn't make you good. It doesn't make you bad. But you know, the problem with gloves for me, and washing gloves for me, and I think some genius should work on it, is that they never fit right after I washed them, right?
Exactly.
It wasn't a good way to wash the darn things. And they're expensive. They can cost you a couple hundred bucks for the really, really nice ones. So I get it, right? But you shouldn't poo-poo anybody because they say, man, I'm worried about it. I'm concerned. But you should be concerned about it. You should be concerned about anything that can get you sick, for goodness sakes.
That's true.
You know, there's nothing noble about being stupid, you know what I mean? And there's nothing noble about feeling superior to anyone else either. I mean, Hemingway said it best. He said, there's nothing noble about being superior, about feeling superior to your fellow man. He said, true nobility is being superior to your former self, right? So keep yourself healthy for the team. That's been a recurring theme of this conversation for the last 2 hours. You know, if you want to be part of a team, be part of that team. Be the best part of that team you can possibly be, right? You might just be the best water boy, or you might be, you know, Babe Ruth. Good for you. But be what you can be. And with the cancer, you know, wash your hands, take a shower, clean your tools, clean your gear. Well, are you kidding me? There's nothing. Noble or chivalrous or good or bad about it. It's just common sense. Why wouldn't you want to clean your gear? Why wouldn't you want to clean your tools? Why wouldn't you want to wash up?
Exactly.
Like after I mow the lawn, I take a shower, for goodness sakes. You know, because I take a shower after I work out because I sweat like Mike Tyson at a spelling bee. I stink. Mm-hmm. I stink after I work out. I stink after a fire. I don't like to stink.
Yep.
You know,
good way of looking.
If you like, yeah, I mean, it's silly. And we're learning so much about the absorption stuff. One of the things that I'm trying to establish, and I believe that we ought to consider two things. Denise Smith has done tremendous work on the cardiovascular heat stressors and things like that, and what it does to our heart and heart attack and all that good stuff. And I know this is kind of a little bit off the cancer deal, but hanging with me here for a minute. I think we ought to develop a downrange mentality for firefighting, right? And what I mean by that is that in the military, the kids don't put in their plates to go downrange until they know they're going downrange, right?
Right.
In other words, they don't put on their bunker gear to just hang out on the fire base. They wear fatigues for 99% of what they do. But when the kids go downrange to go fight battle today, combat today, they put on their gear, they put in their plates, they put on their what's called their battle rattle, right?
Right.
So we wear our battle rattle too haphazardly, too casually. We ought to keep our gear reserved for when we need to wear our gear. We ought to keep our bunker gear in the container, in the cab, in the rig, in the box where it belongs, like they do on the Navy, in the fire control locker, until there's a fire. For everything else, we ought to wear our fatigues. We ought to wear fatigues, and I think we ought to wear military-style fatigues. I hate these gas station uniforms we wear. I think they're an anathema. I can't stand them. They're the one thing that hasn't evolved that I absolutely detest. And I'd love to see us move towards a real military-style fatigue for firefighting, and then that we could wear, I mean, for firefighters, that we could wear for car accidents, high angle rescue, EMS, everything else we do. And we would look distinctly different from the cops if we did that.
Right.
The cops are just dressed up gas station attendant uniforms too. So I think we ought to go to fatigues. And then if it's a fire and we get there and it's actually something on fire, then we ought to put on our battle rattle. It'll change our mindset. It'll put us in that green two combat mindset, which will make us more cautious and more alert. And then if we identify the kill zone, right? So if we look at a house and we say the house is on fire, where should we mask up? Well, it shouldn't be on the front porch. It should probably be 30, 40, 50 feet away from the door, depending on the barometric pressure and the wind and thermal inversion and all that other good stuff that you can observe pretty easily by just looking at the current weather. You don't need a bunch of fancy crap, but maybe you bunker up in the street and then walk to the front door. But limit your inhalation as much as possible. Limit your contamination as much as possible. And then when you're done fighting fire, get out of your dirty gear, pack it up, get it cleaned up, and clean yourself up. Wash your hands, Ryan. You don't want to spread any more germs.
Right.
You know, if it was good enough for the kid in the bathroom, it's good enough for me. You know,
good point, Chief.
I just don't understand the resistance, and I certainly don't understand the ignobility of those who feel superior to those who are concerned about cancer. There's nothing noble about making fun of your fellow firefighters or discounting their opinions or their beliefs. As a matter of fact, that runs contrary to who we are.
Very
you know,
true.
This current internet nonsense of bashing one another is gotten to a level that's just unseemingly. It's not who we are. You want to talk about something that's discrediting the fire? You talked about it earlier. God bless you. You said you know when one of us messes up, you know, gets arrested or you know we go from hero to zero. Boy, if somebody looked at some of the Twitter wars that we have over fog nozzles and smooth bores,
yes,
or, you know, washing our gear. They would think we're the biggest pack of doo-doo heads on the face of the planet. I mean, for goodness sakes. Okay, you don't want to wash your gear? You want to walk around stinky and smelly? Knock yourself out. You know, good for you. You know, but you want to use a smooth board? Knock yourself out. Good for you. You want to use a fog nozzle? Good for you. You want to use foam? Good for you. I mean, just understand why you're using it, when you're using it. Gosh darn! I mean, it's so crazy today the way we attack people because they disagree with us or because they believe something that maybe we don't believe or don't understand. It's crazy, and cancer is right up there. I see it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's about cancer.
we're going to be too safe. Really? Too safe?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. How many times?
No, I want to be too alive. Huh? Can you be too alive?
Right.
I want to be too alive.
Great point. Great, great, great point there. I was going to say, how many times have they gone to a vehicle call, vehicular crash, and they see one car, the one victim had seatbelt on, one didn't have the seatbelt on, and that was the one who perished. And inside, if not to, out loud, they said to themselves, what an idiot. If he wore a seatbelt, he'd still be alive. Well, you know what? If you do something that's for safety, you there's a better chance that you're going to stay alive, you're going to stay healthier. So if you can condemn the guy who didn't wear a seatbelt and you went on the rescue and he was already gone because he went through the windshield, then how can you make fun of your comrades who are washing their hoods, you know, washing Hood Sunday or cleaning their gear because they want to be safe? If you don't want to be safe, that's fine. That's your choice. But you don't jump on them for doing it. And that's what we're seeing a lot on these Twitter wars.
Oh, yeah. And there's no value in it. There's no value in it. I think that we show our arrogance and our meanness when we do that. Listen to what the fellow's saying. If you disagree or you're curious about why he feels that way, shoot him a note and say, "Gosh, Tom, I don't understand what you mean. Can you give me a call? Or what did you mean by that? Or but to just, you know, I'm better than you are. You know what I mean? I'm you know, I'm a good guy. You're a bad guy because I, you know, you don't believe what I believe. Wow, man. Ooh. Ah.
All right. Well, Chief, I can't even begin to say the words thank you. That will do justice to you taking the time to speak with us today. As I've said, there's my dog in the background.
I love it. What kind of dog?
She is a little miniature Schnauzer Chihuahua mix.
And that's just a cat disguised as a dog. We
have a one-eyed cat too named Willie, who actually now is obeying dog commands.
You know, it's so funny. I once heard, I had a cat named Sugar Ray. I was a Grateful Dead fan when I was a kid. Loved the Grateful Dead. And actually got to drive them a few times. They were just lovely people.
Oh, wow.
So fell in love with them and their music. And I had a cat named Sugar Ree that I taught how to fetch. And I always thought that was the coolest cat in the world because I would throw little tinfoil balls. She'd pick them up in her mouth and bring them back to me, right? And then I found out reading an autobiography of Jerry Garcia, who was one of the gentlemen I got to know through the driving him around. He did the same thing with his cat. He thought that was the coolest thing.
That's funny.
So I love animals. I love cats, dogs, horses.
All our animals have been rescued.
I'm a fan. Yeah. I'm a fan.
We are too. We are too. And we always rescue. We don't. We never buy. We just rescue. We feel that's the best way to help out. And our kids, our daughters, feel the same way. And so it's been part of our life. But again,
I do both. I rescue and I buy. So I've bought and I've rescued, and I just think that dogs in particular are so neat because they have that unconditional love, right?
Exactly.
And cats are so cool because if I ever get another cat, I'm going to call it Jefferson because they're so indifferent to everybody else. You know, they're like, dude, I'm doing my thing.
That's great.
Wait, what? What's the dude? Yeah, leave me alone. I love their attitude.
Yeah, that unconditional love is amazing. Yeah, having her near me when I was really down prior to having this surgery, I don't know how I'd be if she hadn't been there next to me, because she just lays there and just leans against me and in her way telling me it's all going to be okay. Don't worry about it. I'm here. You're going to be fine, and that's it. And so, you know, if our animals can express kindness and love, even my two in the morning when they first meet up in the morning, they kiss and lick each other. the dog and the cat, because that's just their nature. And if we can show that, if our animals can show us that, then why the hell can't we show that as humans? Supposedly the highest level of animal that God created. Why do we have to start turning to the dark side every time we disagree with one fact or another? Why can't we just say we agree to disagree? Opinions are like belly buttons. We all have them and they all stink. And then we go from there.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I just want to say it was such a pleasure, and you're very kind. And, you know, there's so much going on in the fire service that's exciting, and I think you're part of that excitement. And,
thank you.
And thank you for what you're doing to help people, you know, get their messages out there and their thoughts, and to start a respectful, honest, and hopefully helpful conversation with folks, and introduce people to different opinions and positions in a way that's inviting and entertaining. I think you do a great job. You've got a great platform, and I think it's a real reflection of your devotion to your duty and who the fire service really is, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we're just a bunch of guys and gals who need to help people and find ways to do that. So
exactly.
Thank you for thank you for giving me the time. I had an incredible 3 hours because we.
Yeah, it's been great.
It was a lot of fun. I don't envy you having to edit this gibberish, but good on you.
I'm looking forward to listening to it all again. I'm going to ask you to stay with me just 1 second as we take the break from the show and stay on the phone.
And thank you so much to everybody who listened.
Yes.
If you ever need to get a hold of me, seriously, my personal phone number is 201-406-8278. Call anytime. Leave me a message if I don't pick up, and let me know what you need or who you are. And I promise I'll get back to you. It sometimes takes me a few days, but I'll get back to you. And I'm serious. That's my personal cell phone number. And my email is bobbyhalton@gmail.com or bobbyhalton@penwell.com. Feel free to shoot me a note. Whatever I can do, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook. Facebook stinks for me because they made me a public figure, so it stinks. Zuckerberg's a mean guy. He won't let me interact with people I love. He's a tyrant, but I like teasing Zuckerberg. I don't know anything about him. He's probably a beautiful young man, but it's fun to tease. It's fun to tease people that make $24 billion a year, right?
Right.
So anyway. But seriously, contact me anytime. Anybody who's listening to this, feel free. If I can help you, if I can support you, if you're mad at me, if I said something you disagree with and you want to find out why, please give me a call. I love you, and thank you all for letting me do it.
Thank you, Chief. It's been great to have you with us. And we'll be right back after these few words. Stay tuned.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa, what happened to us? We used to be so much more active, but lately you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just gonna keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's 12 bucks, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And with that, we wrap another edition of 5 Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. I would like to express a sincere appreciation to Chief Bobby Halton for his time, his energy, his education, his mentoring, everything that he gave us in today's episode. And as he said at the conclusion of his segment, you can reach him directly with either his phone number or his email. So, as he expressed to me, don't be afraid to reach out if you need him for anything regarding the fire service. Did you know that you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our partners, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, Fire Tech, Hennessy Distributing, and the Great Florida Fire School. Portions of instrumental music on 5 Alarm Task Force are courtesy of Lee Rosevier. Find more of his music at happypuppyrecords.ca. If you would like to be a guest on the show or have a comment about one of our shows, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at cause_origin and stay up to date with our blog at bit.ly/DalmatProdTV, and keep your eyes out for a brand new Dalmatian Productions website that will come up soon, and everything will be located in that one special site. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.